Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening to everybody here, depending where you are, and welcome to this new episode of Spanish Loops. Francisco, are you there?
I'm definitely here. Hola, Jorge.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, Jorge, you sound so sweet. What's going on?
Oh, because I'm just inspired by the topic that we're going to talk today about. Don't you go silly and a little bit crazy and a little bit out of your mind when you are making plans?
Oh, come on, quit it.
when you're making plans to get married and everything.
Okay, so today we are in May. And in May, it's the month of the weddings here in Spain. So that's what we're going to be talking. We're going to be talking about getting married in Spain today. Especially, we want to show you how a wedding works in Spain. In case you're invited to a wedding, what are you going to be expecting? Because it's totally different from the American. When we say American, we mean United States and Canada. Totally different from what you guys do on the other side of the ocean to what we do over here.
Let me specify, Francisco, that my tone earlier was a little bit theatrical, just to, you know, like the intro for this chapter.
Oh, you're not getting not, married?
No, I'm not. No. I'm not.
Darn. I'm not giving good news to share.
I'm not giving up.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
For that occasion, but not right now, no. I'm happily single.
Okay. So, shall we?
Shall we? What?
Start talking. Okay. A wedding in Spain. It's, we can say that until, I would say, 1985, 1990s, everybody in Spain would get married in a church, right? Spain, as we all know, by now is not a Catholic country. It's a country without religion, but we cannot deny that most of us, we have been brought up as Catholics.
Well, let me specify, Francisco, that what you mean is we are a secular country, and that is specified in our constitution that it was approved by a referendum in 1978. So Spain is, many people believe that Spain is still a Catholic country. We're not, but we have very, very intense and rooted traditions on the Catholic faith, like holidays. Most of the holidays in Spain are, you know, because of Catholic festivities. And also one of the things that branches into our topic, today's topic, is that you mentioned that there are people that they don't get married in churches, but there is still a very high percentage of couples that only because of tradition, they get married in churches through the Catholic.
There we go. You have to, everybody has to understand that Spain has always been, you know, always. For 800 years, we were a Muslim land, but for 1492, when the Catholic kings came, we have pretty much always been a Catholic kingdom. Then when the dictator Franco came here in 1939, he was very, very Catholic, very conservative. So,
well, and you had to be Catholic, whether you like it or not, you had to.
At that time, you had to be Catholic. So you had to get married in the church. Once we got democracy in 1975, things have been changing little by little. And now more people are not getting married in a church. Right now, this moment in Spain, I think we're about 60% of people, we still get married in a church, or 40%, they do it in legal terms, which it is with a representative of our government, can be a mayor, politician, somebody who signs that you are legally married.
Not forget, Francisco, that that percentage that you mentioned, that they get married in a church, in a Catholic church, most of them, I don't know, I don't have the numbers, but most of them is a kind of a non-declared pressure because of the family traditions. It's like, I don't want to upset my mom, just getting married, just on a court or cold room. We just want the warmth of a church with all the religious by the side. Okay, I don't want to upset my parents or my mom or my dad, whatever. There is a lot of pressure on that. Don't you agree with me on the issue?
Well, pressure, yes. I mean, I think there's pressure, but you have to understand that, you know, if you're going to take your grandparents, they were doing for many, many years, it was the only thing they had, and it was religion. To me, when I got married in a church, I didn't feel pressure about it. I could have cared less doing it in a church or not. I wanted to do it in a church, but yeah, I mean, yes, there's pressure about it. But well, but there, if you decide to get married in a church, obviously you have to follow the church's rules. First of all, you have to be baptized, you have to have your first communion, and you have to have your confirmation done. If you don't have those three things, you cannot get married in a cathedral or in a church.
Seriously, the three things, the three steps.
Yeah, you need to have the three, one of the two in the couple. Because, for example, my sister-in-law, when she got married, her husband, my brother-in-law, he is agnostic. He doesn't believe in anything. So he was baptized, but he never had his first communion. Of course, he didn't have his confirmation done. So the couple married in the church, but she was the only one who got the communion. So as long as there's one of the two who has the three steps, you can get married in a church.
Uh-huh. I didn't know that fact. Well, now we know a little bit of those, let's say, conditions that you have to require to get married in a church. Francisco, have you been to a wedding to someone close to you, to your life, to your like a very close friends from your whole life or some member of your families? Recently, have you been to any wedding?
Yeah, I had a wedding last year.
Oh, you did? Okay. What is the difference? Because you've been married for how long?
I've been married for 25 years now.
25 years. Is there any difference when you got married 25 years ago and the procedure in the same way through the church with today's weddings?
No, it was pretty much the same. I mean, the way I went, it was my wife's cousin, and they got married in a church, and it was pretty much the same.
You have to do some kind of prenuptial courses or something like that.
Yeah. You have to do some prenuptial courses, which I think they were the funniest in the world. At that time, when my wife and I were dating, before we got married, you had to do all of these things. But I know I was working an international company, so she was traveling a lot. And I had to assist to all of these classes by myself. Okay, when you had these other couples, and it was by myself, by myself. So everybody was like, what are you doing alone? As my wife is working outside of Spain. So anyway, I think it was kind of funny because...
Well, your wife-to-be was working.
My wife-to-be at that time, there we go. But they were funny because they talked to you about, obviously, faith, religion, the compromise you get with your partner, you know, that you don't get married only to your wife, it's true. But to your husband, you get married to the whole family and all of that. And of course, there's one day that they talk to you about sexuality. And we had the funniest priest ever. He was like, so as you should all know and have practiced, you shouldn't be a virgin until you get married. Obviously, everybody started laughing, including him. I mean, it was a very, very, very fun classes or, you know, premarital courses. So it was like, okay, let's face it, you all have had sex before marriage. I'm a priest. I don't know anything about it. I don't know what I can tell you about. Yes, please respect it. And hopefully you will bring Catholic kids to this world. That was pretty much all our sexual class, which I think was very funny.
That is what you have to do if you're going to get married through the Catholic Church. I don't know, to be honest, about all the religions, how the procedure is. I have a little idea about the Jewish weddings, how they can be. And it's just, I'm sorry, guys, I have to say this. You know, I'm a person that my face shows and has subtitles, like you once said, Francisco. I'm just remembering now the movie, My Big Fat Greek Wedding. So
fun movie.
Yeah, a lot of fun. But anyway, what I mean is, if you just decide to get married without any religions involved, what's the procedure?
Well, then if you want to just legalize your marriage, what you do is a very humble ceremony. And most of the cities, you can go to the city hall and get married in there in front of a representative of the law. Normally, as I said, it's a politician, but also they have, in most of the cities in Spain, places not just as cold as a city hall, something, a historical little cave or part of the walls of the city that are, so they have accommodated some spaces to do these civil weddings. Okay. You just have to go there and you need to bring, if both of you are Spanish, your ID. If one of the two or the two are not Spanish, you need to certify that you have Spanish residency so you can get married in a Spanish way. And once you present all of that, you just sign a paper and you are legally married. You have to be 18 years old to get married.
And what happens if you are under 18?
Legally, you can get married on your own when you're 18 years old. But if you are 16 on, you can also get married as long as you have your parents' permission. So legal age for marriage in Spain is 16,
mm-hmm.
and on your own, 18.
Well, it makes sense. You know,
it makes sense,
yeah. Okay.
One of the big differences between a religious wedding to a civil wedding is that a religious wedding is going to be male-female. It's going to be a bride and a groom. While on a civil wedding, we can have groom-groom, wife-wife. We can have same genders, which in Spain, we are very, very accepted in gay marriage.
Yeah, don't forget that Spain was the second country in the world that legalized same-gender marriage. It was in the year 2005.
You said 2005? I thought it was like way before then.
No. It was, marriage per se, the word marriage, like a couple, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was 2005. Fully legal, doesn't matter the gender, if they're both males, females, male and female. But before that, and obviously it was approved by the government in the early 80s, it was what it was called the union of facto. That was a kind of a hybrid agreement, nothing to do with the ceremony of wedding or anything like that. When I mean ceremony, I mean just the act of getting married, okay? It was like a legal document. It was signed on both parts. Besides the regular weddings that was taking place everywhere, people of the same gender, they had the problem in many countries, they still have them, that, for instance, let's say that you have a lover, you're gay and you have a lover, and you've been together for 20, 25, 30 years, you know, a whole life together. Obviously, you're getting older and older, and if you're into the hospital, you have to go to the hospital. If you were not... That's why that document was created, or that status was created, okay? Union of non facto, which in Latin means like, yes, you are together and you can prove you have been together for so long and you share things like your apartment, maybe possessions that you can have, whatever. And then it will give you the status and not the privilege, okay? The family was always above everything, but you could not be banned or forbidden to visit that person in case you had to, for instance, as I said, go into a hospital and visit that person. And of course, you were entitled to be the heir on the testament. That way, you know, it was the way to not fight among families for whatever possessions one had or the other. Because when you are together, I mean, if you're young, you don't worry much about that. But when you get a little bit older and time passes and you buy things together, if there is nothing that you can prove that you have been together for so long, probably the family members, what happened to very close friends of mine, that things were under the name of just one and they took absolutely everything and left the other part just, you know,
on the streets.
Without anything, yeah. Without anything, yeah, absolutely.
Well, so from the 80s is when we have the legal union and the word marriage with all the consequences until 2005.
Correct.
Isn't this one of the things that the extreme right political party now in Spain are trying to abolish?
Oh, my goodness. That is a very hot topic because, not only the extreme right, the liberal right as well, they have some mentions about it. They just want to abolish everything regarding... gay rights, adoptions by people of the same gender, that they have been already legally married, and they want to abolish that. And Francisco, I don't care what anyone here thinks, your thoughts, on religion, your thoughts on personalities, your thoughts on how people should live, that is scary.
Well, that's going to me, again, human rights. So love is love, and that's pretty much all that should matter.
Doesn't matter the recipient.
Yeah. So anyway, that's a very hot topic, as you can see.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back to a wedding. Both of us, we have been invited to American weddings in the United States. And oh my God, weddings are very, very different.
Yes, they are. Absolutely. I totally agree with you. Francisco, really, yes, there is lots of differences. If you come to Spanish wedding or any Mediterranean wedding, because we are part of the same culture, more or less, and a wedding in America, please let us know what's the main differences could be.
Okay, I think this, starting from the wedding invitation, here you will get, before you have a formal invitation, you have been probably been asked by the mother or the father of the bride or the groom, are you going to come to the wedding? This is the date, blah, blah, blah. Yes, okay, here. And you give the invitation. It used to be paper, now more and more is becoming digital. Okay, so they send you this QR code or whatever. This is the invitation for you to come to our wedding.
Oh, I thought you were going to mention that you can marry online.
No, the wedding invitation is going to come. No, now it's becoming more trendy to do it, you know, with this either PowerPoints or one of these strange things. Anyway, you get the wedding invitation. And you're going to find out that in that wedding invitation, there's only one day. We don't do wedding rehearsals. That's something that we were invited, you know, and I to a wedding in the United States. And the night before, there's this wedding reception thing, which we don't know. I mean, it's like, I have no clue what on earth is that. It's just the two families getting together, or the most close friends to the family getting there together. Here in Spain, we don't do it. Here, it's the day of the wedding, and that's it. Before the day of the wedding, I mean, a couple of months before, we do the bachelor and the bachelorette parties, okay? In America, a lot of people, they go to Cabo, they go to another big, huge city. Here, we are beginning to see that people goes to a different city just with the friends, okay? You go with the guys and you have fun and that's it. If anybody comes to Spain, you will see groups of guys with, normally the guys, we wear a t-shirt with the face of the groom saying, he's gone, we've lost him forever, or something like that, or something, something funny. Or groups of girls. And I think the girls are, sorry, they're a little bit more sexual about it. Because in the bachelorette parties, when you see a group of girls, many times they have more ornaments in them hanging, you know, sexually related things, which is funny. And the thing is that here you don't go to strippers or you don't go to, no, it's just a way to have a party with your friends.
Okay, well, so, that's what they say.
Well, yes, once in a while, you know, sometimes you could go a little weirder, but normally it's just...
Or wider.
Weirder or wider. But normally it's just a nice weekend with your friends and you go wine tasting and you go for dinner and you go to a couple of pubs at night and that's pretty much it. So our bachelor parties are not as huge deal as they are in the United States.
You want to know a curiosity about those parties, prenuptial parties that we do here in Spain?
Mm-hmm.
This curiosity is that bunches of young ladies, that one of them is obviously is the, let's say, the host, once getting married, and or the boy, the groom, they just go, as you said, to some places and they go a little bit wild about it. There are many cities that they have banned those parties in the historical section of the cities, because it came a moment that, for instance, in Barcelona, in the Gothic section, which is very pretty and, you know, very, all the monuments around there, the cathedral and the alleys, and also in Granada as well, and also in Sevilla, they have banned those bunches of people going around celebrating. So they have to go, if they want to go somewhere, they have to go to places where those things are not banned.
Yeah. That's a good thing. There are some parts of the city, so especially the big cities, where you're not welcome if you're going to have one of these huge parties.
I'm going to make mm-hmm. a very personal question, and I want you to be 100% transparent with me and with the audience. Did you do anything on your previous days on your wedding?
Oh gosh. So
oh, I'm scared now. I'm scared.
Our bachelor party, we got married in April. And in January, we did our bachelor and bachelorette parties. And the thing is that we had no idea what was going to happen. Aina and I, we didn't know anything. And what happened is that my friends and her friends, they got together and they decided the two groups rent a house for a long weekend for 3 nights in a small village in the Pyrenees. And it was in February. I said, you don't know, it was February. And the thing is that it was going to be a great party, and it was just the two groups, the boys and the girls, having fun, ha ha hee hee. And we had no idea what they had prepared for us. So the day or the night, one night they decided to dress us up, and they decided to dress us up as what we are not. So they decided to, I don't have much hair, so they decided to shave most of my hair, but they left me like a little mohawk, and they dressed me like a punk with makeup. And I was like, you know, like Doc Martin boots and this leather jacket all torn apart. I look like a mess. On the other side, my wife, she was in the other bathroom with the girls. And, you know, I know she doesn't wear much makeup. She doesn't do much for her. So they decided to go full glam. And she looked like a prostitute. I mean, like huge eyelashes and big, big makeup. I mean, I know it's super pale. So she was like totally brown. I mean, it was like not tan, it was like brown. They put all her hair up. It was like huge. And we were going to a one Michelin star restaurant for dinner.
You mean dressed like that to a Michelin star?
Yeah. That's
oh
where
my
we
God.
Were going. So it was like the most embarrassing thing in the world. So we went there. And obviously our friends, they made us go in first. So we went first ones in this beautiful hall where, you know, with perfect place, one Michelin star restaurant, my wife to be dressed as a hooker, and me as a punk. I mean, it was like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing. And suddenly we looked around, everybody in that restaurant, they were dressed up in costumes. Our friends didn't realize that it was carnival. The only people that were not dressed up, it was them. People were looking at them because they were not dressed up. It was so funny. It was like, oh.
I bet it was fun.
It was very fun. It was a great weekend. So, yeah, that's what we did for our bachelor and bachelorette party. Yes, the two groups getting together and having fun.
So we don't have, like in Vegas, wedding chapels.
No, we don't do that. No, it was just...
And we cannot decide, for instance, let's say that you're in love with your fiancé and then you decide to, oi, what? Why don't we go tomorrow to the city hall and get married? Can you do that here in Spain?
No, you need to do it in advance. You need to plan everything in advance. Okay. You cannot go crazy like in Vegas.
Okay, right.
Elvis cannot marry you.
Or the city hall, you cannot even go and
you cannot show up,
fill out the papers and get married the same day. But it, I mean, I guess there is an option that if you want to do it in secret without shouting it out loud to your family, how long is the time that you can apply for it and get married?
Oh, in less than a week, you can get married.
Ah, okay, okay,
so it's quite fast.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Anyway, let's go back to the wedding. If somebody comes to a wedding, now you need to make a gift. A gift in the United States, they still do wedding lists, which I was very shocked. And you buy the pots and the pans and all of that. Here in Spain, less and less wedding lists are being made. What they do is in the beautiful wedding invitation that they give you, there is a great bank account. And what you give is money.
Money,
okay?
Yeah.
How much money do you give? Well, more or less, it is custom to be paying about 150 to 200 euros per person. So especially when you are younger and all your friends are getting married and you have 5-6 weddings every year, you have to give 200 everyone in the couple, plus the dress, plus this, plus that, that. So it is a budget.
Oh, and it could be a business for those who are getting married.
Well, I mean, it is a business because who pays for the wedding? In the United States, normally, the United States and Canada, normally the parents of the bride are the ones who pay for the wedding. Here in Spain, it's customary that you split, I mean, especially if you are same social status, and pretty much, you know, you invite your family and friends, and my family, my friends, pretty much the same, parents split the money. Okay, uh-huh. If it's yeah. whatever it is, it's split it in two, and it doesn't go only to the parents of the bride, right? Which is mm-hmm. more customary in America. The wedding gifts will be only for the kids. Normally, they don't. That money doesn't get to pay the wedding. Okay, it's just for the kids to set their house or go on honeymoon or things like that. For the day of the wedding, you are invited to a Spanish wedding. You need to dress up. Yeah, absolutely. To the wedding that I went, barely no one was wearing a blazer, and I think there were like three people wearing ties. Only the groom, the father of the bride, the father of the groom, and two Spanish people were wearing ties.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Spain, if you're a guy, you better have a suit and a tie. Yeah. That's mandatory.
And if you're a woman, you must have the best dressed ever.
You need, okay, for women, obviously, again, it's much more complicated, all of the dress codes. It's becoming a trend lately that they send you a dress code, especially for the ladies,
mm-hmm.
of what you should wear. If it's, you know, cocktail, if it's night, if it's also depending on the time, okay? Time of the year, time of the wedding. If it's in the morning, it's going to be normally a cocktail. If it's afternoon wedding, it's going to be long gowns, okay? So you have to wear the whole long gown. Okay. Be careful with the hats, ladies. Hat is a little bit more complicated because you are only allowed to wear a hat if it's a wedding in the morning. If it's a wedding in the afternoon, you are not allowed to wear a hat.
Well, it's not that you're not
it's allowed. Customary. I mean, they will not kill you.
Yeah.
yeah. You're right. I mean, it's costume or it's respectful to not wear a hat at night.
Mm-hmm.
If you wear a hat in the morning, it's a little bit uncomfortable because you have to have lunch with the hat on. You are allowed to remove the hat after the lunch for the dancing, if so. Right? So that's mm-hmm. something important that ladies don't. Gentlemen, if you wear a hat, you obviously have to remove your hat once you enter the church, if you're going to a religious wedding. Okay. Normally here, gentlemen, unless it's a summer in Andalusia type of wedding where it's going to be hell hot, you don't wear a hat.
Yeah, but you have mentioned something really interesting. Ladies, when they go into a church, and if they're wearing a hat, they are allowed to wear it. But gents, if you're wearing a hat or a top hat, depending on how classy the wedding is, you have to remove your cap when you go, as a man, when you go into a church. And Francisco, I'm going to ask you something which I think it is worldwide regarding weddings. There is one rule which is totally sacred, especially for women, that they cannot wear anything white.
Of course. White is reserved for the bride. Uh-huh. White, off-white, ivory, butter, any type of shades of white.
Uh-huh.
You should not be wearing it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
One of the things I love, especially in the south of Spain, it's that all the way in the Mediterranean, as the light is so beautiful, people, ladies in the Mediterranean, they are a little bit more daring with the colors. And the weddings in the Mediterranean are much more bright. All the ladies wear, you know, coral dresses or fuchsia or bright greens, colors that are much more impressive than the ones here. Here we go a little bit more, you know, settle. Here in the north, it's a little bit more
conservative.
Our weather. So the day of the wedding, you should, if the wedding it's at 12, you should be arriving at the church or at the place where it takes place about half an hour before. And that's okay for the guests to do so. Okay. Normally, brides are always on time. The groom will make it there like 15 minutes before the wedding to greet everybody, to make sure that everything, and the last one to come, it's the bride. Everybody goes inside of the church, the couple and the parents. Okay, normally it's the bride with her father and the groom with his mother. Here in Spain, we don't have bridesmaids and groomsmaids, all of these things that when we see the American movies, in the altar, you have like six girls all dressed the same and the guys are... Here, we don't have that. Here, it's just in the altar, it's going to be the ones that are getting married and the parents of the two. No bridesmaids. All of these things that the bridesmaids have to organize, not here. Here is a big no-no. All right? Here is just the people who are getting married. By tradition, is it true that the groom's family sits on the left of the church and the bride's on the right? Not anymore. Unless you go to a wedding that has a lot of protocol into it, you will not be assigned where to be seated. So you can sit wherever. Normally, the front benches are reserved for the family, the grandparents, all of these normal things. The rest, you can sit wherever you want. After the mass, everybody comes out. Well, right after the mass, people go to the main altar to kiss the bride and the groom. And this, the thing is that they have to go behind. They have to go to the sacristy, the bride and the groom and the parents, to sign that they are legally married. Okay? So you have to do this extra step.
Well, actually, Francisco, when you said that they have to go to the sacristy to sign the papers to be legally married, actually, when you do a wedding in a church through the Catholic rite, you have to have the civil marriage a few days beforehand. And then, and correct me if I'm wrong here, what you are signing in the sacristy is the church papers that under the Catholic Church, you are, or whatever church it is, you are married for them, for that specific religion. Is that true or not?
Exactly. I mean, you have to get married legally before the religious wedding.
You mean the civil wedding, right?
Yes. The civil wedding. It's not just a wedding. I mean, it's not a wedding. And normally, you have to go with two witnesses representing the bride and two witnesses representing the groom, who will sign legally saying that this couple are getting married freely and nobody is here forcing the other part to get married.
So there are some protocols.
There's some protocols that you have to follow.
Ceremony.
Yeah. So that's the legal wedding, the civil wedding. I'm talking about that's the parents and brothers of the bride and the groom don't even go. It's just six people. That's all it takes. Mm-hmm. So right after the wedding, the couple will go and sign on the church's archives. And then everybody comes out of the wedding, of the ceremony. And it's when we throw rice, okay, to the bride and the groom. That represents fertility and goodness for the couple.
Did you think that tradition is gone also a little bit?
No, I think there is. The thing is that the problem with the rice is that it stays on the floor.
Yeah, and there's a lot of pigeons later on.
Then the comes a pigeon. And I'm not kidding. The pigeons come and they eat it and then they pollute the city. And that's why a lot of churches, they are not allowing anymore to throw rice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's one of the things. After that, normally at the doorsteps of the ceremony, you're there, la, 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 la. Now it's going to go to the wedding reception. You're going to...
Yeah, but what happens in between, just after the wedding itself and the reception, people needs to go from the church to wherever the reception is. And sometimes it's far away, like let's say in a big farm that is dedicated for those events. But in the meantime, what happens?
So first of all, when you come out of the wedding, you're going to take the family pictures and, you know, the family of the groom, the family of the grandparents, the friends. All that. Okay, so you get all the official pictures taken at the doorstep normally of the church. And then a bus will come or two buses will come and they will take you to whatever the venue is. They will take everybody and normally except the bride and the groom. The bride and the groom will go away and they will have their wedding pictures taken. Here, we're beginning to see that the bride and the groom, they're beginning to have wedding pictures taken days before the wedding. So the groom gets to see his wife-to-be already dressing her gown,
That's a fairly new thing, right?
Yeah, it's a very new thing. The tradition says that, you know, right after the wedding, you go with your bride, with your spouse now, and you have the pictures, okay?
And you normally go to pictures. What do you mean horrible tacky pictures? Don't tell
them. Come on. Just the one with the married couple. Flower bouquet. And, oh, God. I hate them.
No, but they normally go to the most iconic place of the city where they have celebrated their wedding, and normally in the reception, while everybody is waiting, because there's no food coming out, there's just drinks, like a little cocktail before the celebration itself, right? The reception. So is when people start getting a little bit wild and impatient, just waiting for the couple to come over and start everything.
Once you make it to the restaurant or to the place where you have the lunch or the dinner, you're going to be waiting for about an hour to an hour and a half until the bride and the groom come. So that's when you drink maybe a little bit too much. And thank God now they're beginning to bring out, you know, some croquettes, some little things that you...
Appetizers.
So you're not eating with your empty stomach because, you know, it's like, okay, give me some food and then give me some drinks.
Yeah.
Then the bride and the groom comes in, everybody sits down, and we have a lunch.
Or a dinner.
But we are talking like a 6, 7, 9, 10 course meal. I mean, you are not going to be hungry on a Spanish wedding. If you leave a Spanish wedding hungry, it's because that couple is very cheap. Don't you think so? I mean, in Spanish weddings, you eat so much.
Yes.
So much.
Yeah.
What else? Okay, another difference. We barely don't have speeches of the, you know, the brother or the groom, the...
Yeah, that's true.
Bridesmaid.
Yeah.
We don't have that here, which I think is a pity because I love them. I think they're funny. It puts a lot of pressure in whoever's speaking, but we don't normally.
True.
So normally we do have a presidential table, you know, where it's going to be the bride and the groom with their parents. If the family is not too big, you know, maybe the brothers and sisters, okay? But normally it's just, it's kind of boring when you are in a Spanish wedding, when you're the groom and the bride, because you're with your parents and at the table by you, you have all your friends getting drunk and having all this fun. And there you are like with the aunties and it's like, okay, cool. So it's kind of like, okay, hell with it. After the big, huge dinner, here comes the party. First dance, normally it's a waltz, okay? Very traditional. And anyway, there are two ways to start the dance. The normal one, it is to have the bride and the groom, they start the dance. But something that I have seen in a few weddings, and I loved it, maybe because now I'm the father, is that the ones that start dancing is the bride and the father of the bride. And then the groom comes in and asks the father permission to dance with his wife.
Nah.
The first time I saw it, I cried. I best promised that. I was like, oh my God, if my daughter does that to me, I'll cry big time. So anyway, in the traditional way, it is normally, it is the bride and the groom who starts the dance. They open the dance. After a couple, you know, 3, 4 seconds, the parents of the bride and the groom, they dance, and then they start switching. So the bride will dance with her father, the groom with his mother, and the in-laws together. And then you change, and the groom will dance with his mother-in-law and the bride with his father-in-law. Right? So that's...
I'd love to see any of those families if they have family problems those days. How they
then it's the friends that come along. So the first dance is always a waltz, and then normally we're Spanish, and many times the second dance, it is going to be a paso doble.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, true.
So many times you're going to have a paso doble. And a paso doble, I like, you know, the waltz, the paso doble are the way to make our elderly being able to dance.
Yeah.
Because those are very easy dances that they can, you know, you're not required. So if you have a grandpa or an auntie, something that, you know, they will dance and you dance with your grandpa or your grandma, those two dances. After that, here comes the modern music and you are going to go on and on and on and on.
You know, which is the moment in that specific time of the whole wedding ceremony, which I don't like at all.
Which one?
It's when they start putting oldies music, oldies type of 70s and 80s music that they were very popular in our gels, and then we just jump immediately to the dancing floor to dance them. That's when we show our age there, don't we?
I love it. Give me some ABBA, give me some Boney M, give me that. Oh, come on, that is fun.
Yeah. And then after that, I guess that they live happily ever after, don't they?
Well, you live happily ever after. And by tradition, normally you go to your house. And the day after the wedding, you go to your parents' house. And many families, what they do is both families, just, you know, the parents and the brothers and sisters, you get together and you have a dinner and you talk over what happened the day before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what a Spanish wedding is all about.
And then honeymoon, of course.
And then, well, yeah, the honeymoon, obviously, if you get married, for example, in March, you don't want to go on honeymoon because it's going to be creepy weather. So many times they're waiting for a couple of months and then they go in June or whatever.
You know, which is a very popular destination for Spaniards when they marry, let's say, off season that you were mentioning, they go to the Caribbean. They go to the Dominican Republic,
okay,
because of you know, the cultural attachments that we have with them. They also go to Cuba,
yeah,
a lot of them, because we are allowed to travel to Cuba, and also maybe a cruise on the Caribbean. That is very, very attractive.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, the number one destination of newlyweds is the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Anywhere around it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Because for us, it's really, really exotic.
Yeah.
And because we are in the other side of the Atlantic, it's like the big journey. I mean, if you live in the States, obviously the United States is huge and big. And if you fly from Seattle to the Caribbean, it might take you like about 5-6 hours to get there, or even more. But from here, it's like about 10
it's
hours.
It's crossing the ocean.
Yeah, it's crossing. But I mean, in that latitude, it's like a 10 hours flight.
So it is the destination.
That's right. Correct. Yeah. Okay, Francisco, what else do we do?
Well, let's hope we get invited to our wedding shortly and we can have some fun.
Okay. All righty. So this was Jorge Roman talking on behalf of Traveling with Jorge.
And this is Francisco Glaria talking on behalf of Traveling the Steps.
And guys out there, if you want to know what is happening in our web pages, just visit them. Francisco's is travelingsteps.es.
And Jorge's is travelingwithjorge.wordpress.com. Jorge, see you next week.
See you next week, Francisco. Bye, everybody. And as usual, we want to thank all our listeners for being there every week, letting us sharing our talks. Follow us in Spanish Loops, in Facebook, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite platform.
And in Instagram, you can find us as The Spanish Loops Podcast, no spaces, all together. If you want to find us the quickest way, just Google Spanish Loops Podcast and you will find us. Hasta la vista, amigos.
See you next week.